This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents The Dead Harlequin, a Harley Quinn short story by Agatha Christie, performed by Hugh Fraser.
The Dead Harlequin. Mr. Satterthwaite walked slowly up Bond Street, enjoying the sunshine. He was, as usual, carefully and beautifully dressed, and was bound for the Harchester Galleries, where there was an exhibition of the paintings of one Frank Bristow, a new and hitherto unknown artist who showed signs of suddenly becoming the rage. Mr. Satterthwaite was a patron of the arts. As Mr. Satterthwaite entered the Harchester Galleries, he was greeted at once with a smile of pleased recognition.
"Good morning, Mr. Satterthwaite. I thought we should see you before long. You know Bristow's work?"
"Fine. Very fine indeed, quite unique of its kind." Mr. Satterthwaite purchased a catalogue and stepped through the open archway into the long room where the artist's works were displayed. They were watercolours, executed with such extraordinary technique and finish that they resembled coloured etchings. Mr. Satterthwaite walked slowly around the walls, scrutinising, and on the whole, approving. He thought that this young man deserved to arrive. Here was originality, vision, and a most severe and exacting technique. There were crudities, of course. That was only to be expected. But there was also something closely allied to genius. Mr. Satterthwaite paused before a little masterpiece representing Westminster Bridge, with its crowd of buses, trams, and hurrying pedestrians. A tiny thing and wonderfully perfect. It was called, he noted, the Ant Heap. He passed on and quite suddenly drew in his breath with a gasp, his imagination held and riveted. The picture was called The Dead Harlequin. The forefront of it represented a floor of inlaid squares of black and white marble. In the middle of the floor lay Harlequin on his back with his arms outstretched in his motley of black and red. Behind him was a window, and outside that window, gazing in at the figure on the floor, was what appeared to be the same man, silhouetted against the red glow of the setting sun. The picture excited Mr. Satterthwaite for two reasons. The first was that he recognized, or thought that he recognized, the face of the man in the picture. It bore a distinct resemblance to a certain Mr. Quinn, an acquaintance whom Mr. Satterthwaite had encountered once or twice under somewhat mystifying circumstances.
"Surely I can't be mistaken," he murmured. "If it is so, what does it mean?"
For it had been Mr. Satterthwaite's experience that every appearance of Mr. Quinn had some distinct significance attaching to it. There was, as already mentioned, a second reason for Mr. Satterthwaite's interest. He recognized the scene of the picture.
"The terrace room at Charnley," said Mr. Satterthwaite. "Curious. And very interesting."
He looked with more attention at the picture, wondering what exactly had been in the artist's mind. One Harlequin dead on the floor, another Harlequin looking through the window. Or was it the same Harlequin? He moved slowly along the walls, gazing at other pictures with unseeing eyes, with his mind always busy on the same subject. He was excited. Life, which had seemed a little drab this morning, was drab no longer. He knew quite certainly that he was on the threshold of exciting and interesting events. He crossed to the table where sat Mr. Cobb, a dignitary of the Harchester Galleries, whom he had known for many years.
"I have a fancy for buying number 39, he said, "if it is not already sold."
Mr. Cobb consulted a ledger.
"The pick of the bunch," he murmured. "Quite a little gem, isn't it? No, it is not sold."
He quoted a price.
"It is a good investment, Mr. Satterthwaite. You will have to pay three times as much for it this time next year."
"That is always said on these occasions," said Mr. Satterthwaite, smiling.
"Well, and haven't I been right?" demanded Mr. Cobb. "I don't believe if you were to sell your collection, Mr. Satterthwaite, that a single picture would fetch less than you gave for it." "I will buy this picture," said Mr. Satterthwaite. "I will give you a cheque now. You won't regret it. We believe in Bristow." "He is a young man?" 27 or 28, I should say. I should like to meet him, said Mr. Satterthwaite. Perhaps he will come and dine with me one night. I can give you his address. I'm sure he would leap at the chance. Your name stands for a good deal in the artistic world. You flatter me, said Mr. Satterthwaite, and was going on when Mr. Cobb interrupted. Oh, here he is now. I will introduce you to him right away. He rose from behind his table. Mr. Satterthwaite accompanied him to where a big, clumsy young man was leaning against the wall, surveying the world at large from behind the barricade of a ferocious scowl. Mr. Cobb made the necessary introductions, and Mr. Satterthwaite made a formal and gracious little speech.
I have just had the pleasure of acquiring one of your pictures, The Dead Harlequin.
Oh. Well, you won't lose by it, said Mr. Bristow ungraciously. A damn good bit of work, although I say it.
I can see that, said Mr. Satterthwaite. Your work interests me very much, Mr. Bristow. It is extraordinarily mature for so young a man. I wonder if you would give me the pleasure of dining with me one night. Are you engaged this evening?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm not, said Mr. Bristow, still with no overdone appearance of graciousness.
Then, shall we say 8 o'clock? Said Mr. Satterthwaite. Here is my card, with the address on it.
Oh, all right, said Mr. Bristow. Thanks, he added, as a somewhat obvious afterthought.
A young man who has a poor opinion of himself and is afraid that the world should share it.
Such was Mr. Satterthwaite's summing up as he stepped out into the sunshine of Bond Street, and Mr. Satterthwaite's judgment of his fellow men was seldom far astray.
Frank Bristow arrived about 8:05 to find his host and a third guest awaiting him. The other guest was introduced as a Colonel Monckton. They went in to dinner almost immediately. There was a fourth place laid at the oval mahogany table, and Mr. Satterthwaite uttered a word of explanation.
I half expected my friend Mr. Quinn might drop in, he said. I wonder if you have ever met him. Mr. Harley Quinn?
I never meet people, growled Bristow.
Colonel Monckton stared at the artist with the detached interest he might have accorded to a new species of jellyfish. Mr. Satterthwaite exerted himself to keep the ball of conversation rolling amicably.
I took a special interest in that picture of yours because I thought I recognized the scene of it as being the terrace room at Charnley. Was I right?
As the artist nodded, he went on,
That is very interesting. I have stayed at Charnley several times myself in the past. Perhaps you know some of the family.
No, I don't, said Bristow. That sort of family wouldn't care to know me. I went there in a charabang.
Dear me, said Colonel Monckton, for the sake of saying something.
In a charabang? Dear me!
Frank Bristow scowled at him.
Why not? He demanded ferociously.
Poor Colonel Monckton was taken aback. He looked reproachfully at Mr. Satterthwaite as though to say, These primitive forms of life may be interesting to you as a naturalist, but why drag me in?
Beastly things, charabangs, he said. They jolt you so, going over the bumps. Well, if you can't afford a Rolls-Royce, you've got to go in charabangs, said Bristow fiercely.
Colonel Monckton stared at him. Mr. Satterthwaite thought,
Unless I can manage to put this young man at his ease, we are going to have a very distressing evening.
Charnley always fascinated me, he said. I have been there only once since the tragedy. A grim house. And a ghostly one.
Well, that's true, said Bristow.
There are actually 2 authentic ghosts, said Monckton. They say that Charles I walks up and down the terrace with his head under his arm. I've forgotten why, I'm sure. Then there is the weeping lady with the silver ewer, who is always seen after one of the Charnleys dies.
Tosh, said Bristow scornfully.
They have certainly been a very ill-fated family, said Mr. Satterthwaite hurriedly. 4 holders of the title have died a violent death, and the late Lord Charnley committed suicide.
Oh, ghastly business, said Monckton gravely. I was there when it happened.
Well, let me see, that must be 14 years ago, said Mr. Satterthwaite. The house has been shut up ever since.
Well, I don't wonder at that, said Monkton. Must have been a terrible shock for a young girl. They'd been married a month, just home from their honeymoon, big fancy dress ball to celebrate their homecoming. Just as the guests were starting to arrive, Charnley locked himself into the oak parlour and shot himself. That sort of thing isn't done. I beg your pardon. He turned his head sharply to the left and looked across at Mr. Satterthwaite with an apologetic laugh. I'm beginning to get the jim-jam, Satterthwaite. I thought for a moment there was someone sitting in that empty chair and that he'd said something to me. Yes, he went on after a minute or two. It was a pretty ghastly shock to Alex Charnley. She was one of the prettiest girls you could see anywhere, cram full of what people call the joy of living. And now they say she's like a ghost herself. Not that I've seen her for years. I believe she lives abroad most of the time. And the boy? The boy is at Eton. What he will do when he comes of age, I don't know. I don't think somehow that he will reopen the old place. It would make a good people's pleasure park, said Bristow. Colonel Monkton looked at him with cold abhorrence. No, you don't really mean that, said Mr. Satterthwaite. You wouldn't have painted that picture if you did. Tradition and atmosphere are intangible things. They take centuries to build up, and if you destroyed them, you couldn't rebuild them again in 24 hours. He rose. Let us go into the smoking room. I have some photographs there of Charnley which I should like to show you. One of Mr. Satterthwaite's hobbies was amateur photography. He was also the proud author of a book, Homes of My Friends. The friends in question were all rather exalted, and the book itself showed Mr. Satterthwaite forth in a rather more snobbish light than was really fair to him. That is the photograph I took off the terrace room last year, he said. He handed it to Bristow. You see, it is taken at almost the same angle as is shown in your picture. That is rather a wonderful rug. It is a pity that photographs can't show colour. I remember it, said Bristow. Marvellous bit of colour. It glowed like a flame. All the same, it looked a bit incongruous there, wrong size for that big room with its black and white squares. There's no rug anywhere else in the room. Spoils the whole effect. It was like a gigantic bloodstain. Perhaps that gave you your idea for your picture, said Mr. Satterthwaite. Perhaps it did, said Bristow thoughtfully. On the face of it, one would naturally stage a tragedy in the little panelled room leading out of it. The oak parlour, said Monkton. Yes, that's the haunted room, right enough. There is a priest's hiding hole in there, a movable panel by the fireplace. Tradition has it that Charles I was concealed there once. There were 2 deaths from duelling in that room, and it was there, as I say, that Reggie Charnley shot himself. He took the photograph from Bristow's hand. Why, that's the Bokhara rug, he said. Worth a couple of £1,000, I believe. When I was there, it was in the oak parlour, the right place for it. It looks silly on that great expanse of marble flags. Mr. Satterthwaite was looking at the empty chair, which he had drawn up beside his. Then he said thoughtfully, I wonder when it was moved. Well, it must have been recently. Why, I remember having a conversation about it on the very day of the tragedy. Charnley was saying it really ought to be kept under glass. Mr. Satterthwaite shook his head. The house was shut up immediately after the tragedy, and everything was left exactly as it was. Bristow broke in with a question. He had laid aside his aggressive manner. Why did Lord Charnley shoot himself? He asked. Colonel Monkton shifted uncomfortably in his chair. Well, no one ever knew, he said vaguely. I suppose, said Mr. Satterthwaite slowly, that it was suicide. The colonel looked at him in blank astonishment. Suicide? He said. Why, of course it was suicide, my dear fellow. I was there in the house myself. Mr. Satterthwaite looked towards the empty chair at his side, and smiling to himself, as though at some hidden joke the others could not see, he said quietly, Sometimes one sees things more clearly years afterwards than one could possibly at the time. Nonsense, spluttered Monkton. Nonsense! How can you possibly see things better when they're vague in your memory instead of clear and sharp? But Mr. Satterthwaite was reinforced from an unexpected quarter. I know what you mean, said the artist. I should say that possibly you are right. It's a question of proportion, isn't it? And more than proportion, probably. Relativity and all that sort of thing. Well, if you ask me, said the Colonel, all this Einstein business is a lot of dashed nonsense. So are spiritualists and the spook of one's grandmother. He glared round fiercely. Of course it was suicide, he went on. Didn't I practically see the thing happen with my own eyes? Tell us about it, said Mr. Satterthwaite, so that we shall see it with our eyes also. With a somewhat mollified grunt, the Colonel settled himself more comfortably in his chair. Well, the whole thing was extraordinarily unexpected, he began. Charlie had been his usual, normal self. There was a big party staying in the house for this ball. No one could ever have guessed he would go and shoot himself just as the guests began arriving. It would have been better taste if he had waited until they had gone, said Mr. Satterthwaite. Well, of course it would. Damn bad taste to do a thing like that.
Uncharacteristic, said Mr. Satterthwaite.
Yes, admitted Monckton. It wasn't like Charlie.
And yet it was suicide.
Well, of course it was suicide. Why, there were three or four of us there at the top of the stairs. Myself, the Ostrander girl, Algy Darcy, oh, and one or two others. Charlie passed along the hall below and went into the oak parlour. The Ostrander girl said there was a ghastly look on his face and his eyes were staring. But of course, that's nonsense. She couldn't even see his face from where we were. But he did walk in a hunched way, as if the weight of the world was on his shoulders. One of the girls called to him. She was somebody's governess, I think, whom Lady Charnley had included in the party out of kindness. She was looking for him with a message. She called out, Lord Charnley, Lady Charnley wants to know. He paid no attention, went into the oak parlour and slammed the door, and we heard the key turn in the lock. Then, 1 minute after, we heard the shot. We rushed down to the hall. There's another door from the oak parlour leading into the terrace room. We tried that, but it was locked too. In the end, we had to break the door down. Charnley was lying on the floor, dead, with a pistol close beside his right hand. Now, what could that have been but suicide? Accident? Don't tell me. There's only one other possibility. Murder. And you can't have murder without a murderer. You admit that, I suppose.
The murderer might have escaped, suggested Mr. Satterthwaite.
Well, that is impossible. If you have a bit of paper and a pencil, I'll draw you a plan of the place. There are two doors into the oak parlour, one into the hall and one into the terrace room. Both these doors were locked on the inside, and the keys were in the locks.
The window?
Shut, and the shutters fastened across it. There was a pause. So, that is that, said Colonel Monckton triumphantly.
It certainly seems to be, said Mr. Satterthwaite, sadly.
Mind you, said the Colonel. Although I was laughing just now at the spiritualists, I don't mind admitting that there was a deuced rummy atmosphere about the place, about that room in particular. There are several bullet holes in the panels of the walls, the results of the duels that took place in that room, and there is a queer stain on the floor that always comes back, though they've replaced the wood several times. I suppose there will be another blood stain on the floor now. Poor Charnley's blood.
Was there much blood?
Asked Mr. Satterthwaite. Very little. Curiously little, so the doctor said.
Where did he shoot himself? Through the head?
No, through the heart. Well, that's not the easy way to do it, said Bristow. Frightfully difficult to know where one's heart is. I should never do it that way myself.
Mr. Satterthwaite shook his head. He was vaguely dissatisfied. He had hoped to get at something. He hardly knew what.
Colonel Monckton went on. It's a spooky place, Charlie. Of course, I didn't see anything.
You didn't see the weeping lady with the silver ewer?
No, I did not, sir, said the Colonel emphatically. But I expect every servant in the place swore they did. Superstition was the curse of the Middle Ages, said Bristow. There are still traces of it here and there, but thank goodness we're getting free from it.
Superstition, mused Mr. Satterthwaite.
His eyes turned again to the empty chair.
Sometimes, don't you think it might be useful?
Bristow stared at him.
Useful? That's a queer word. Well, I hope you're convinced now, Satterthwaite, said the Colonel.
Oh, quite, said Mr. Satterthwaite. On the face of it, it seems odd. So purposeless for a newly married man, young, rich, happy, celebrating his homecoming. Curious. But I agree there is no getting away from the facts, he repeated softly. The facts, and frowned.
Well, I suppose the interesting thing is a thing we none of us will ever know, said Monkton. The story behind it all. Of course there were rumours, all sorts of rumours. You know the kind of things people say.
But no one knew anything, said Mr. Satterthwaite thoughtfully.
Well, it's not a best-seller mystery, is it? Remarked Bristow. No one gained by the man's death.
No one except an unborn child, said Mr. Satterthwaite.
Monkton gave a sharp chuckle.
Rather a blow to poor Hugo Charnley, he observed. As soon as it was known that there was going to be a child, he had the graceful task of sitting tight and waiting to see if it would be a boy or a girl. Rather an anxious wait for his creditors, too. In the end, a boy it was, and a disappointment for the lot of them.
Was the widow very disconsolate? Asked Bristow.
Poor child, said Monkton. I shall never forget her. She didn't cry or break down or anything. She was like something frozen. As I say, she shut up the house shortly afterwards, and as far as I know, it's never been reopened since.
So, we're left in the dark as to motive, said Bristow with a slight laugh. Another man or another woman? Must have been one or the other, eh?
It seems like it, said Mr. Satterthwaite.
And the betting strongly on another woman, continued Bristow, since the fair widow is not married again. I hate women, he added dispassionately.
Mr. Satterthwaite smiled a little, and Frank Bristow saw the smile and pounced upon it.
You may smile, he said, but I do. They upset everything. They interfere. They get between you and your work. I only once met a woman who was, well, interesting.
I thought there would be one, said Mr. Satterthwaite.
Not in the way you mean. I just met her casually, as a matter of fact. It was in a train. After all, he added defiantly, why shouldn't one meet people in trains?
Oh, certainly, certainly, said Mr. Satterthwaite soothingly. A train is as good a place as anywhere else.
It was coming down from the north. We had the carriage to ourselves. I don't know why, but we began to talk. I don't know her name, and I don't suppose I shall ever meet her again. I don't know that I want to. It might be a pity. He paused, struggling to express himself. She wasn't quite real, you know. Shadowy. Like one of the people who come out of the hills in Gaelic fairy tales.
Mr. Satterthwaite nodded gently. His imagination pictured the scene easily enough. The very positive and realistic Bristow, and a figure that was silvery and ghostly, shadowy, as Bristow had said.
I suppose if something very terrible had happened, so terrible as to be almost unbearable, one might get like that. One might run away from reality into a half-world of one's own, and then, of course, after a time, one wouldn't be able to get back.
Was that what had happened to her? Asked Mr. Satterthwaite curiously.
I don't know, said Bristow. She didn't tell me anything, I'm only guessing. One has to guess if one's going to get anywhere.
Yes, said Mr. Satterthwaite slowly. One has to guess.
He looked up as the door opened. He looked up quickly and expectantly, but the butler's words disappointed him.
A lady, sir, has called to see you on very urgent business. Miss Aspasia Glenn.
Mr. Satterthwaite rose in some astonishment. He knew the name of Aspasia Glenn, who in London did not. First advertised as the woman with the scarf, she had given a series of matinees single-handed that had taken London by storm. With the aid of her scarf, she had impersonated rapidly various characters. In turn, the scarf had been the coif of a nun, the shawl of a mill worker, the headdress of a peasant, and 100 other things, and in each impersonation, Aspasia Glenn had been totally and utterly different. As an artist, Mr. Satterthwaite paid full reverence to her. As it happened, he had never made her acquaintance. A call upon him at this unusual hour intrigued him greatly. With a few words of apology to the others, he left the room and crossed the hall to the drawing-room. Miss Glenn was sitting in the very centre of a large settee, upholstered in gold brocade. so poised she dominated the room. Mr. Satterthwaite perceived at once that she meant to dominate the situation. Curiously enough, his first feeling was one of repulsion. He had been a sincere admirer of Aspasia Glenn's art. Her personality, as conveyed to him over the footlights, had been appealing and sympathetic. Her effect there had been wistful and suggestive rather than commanding. But now, face to face with the woman herself, he received a totally different impression. There was something hard, bold, forceful about her. She was tall and dark, possibly about 35 years of age. She was undoubtedly very good-looking, and she clearly relied upon the fact.
"You must forgive this unconventional call, Mr. Satterthwaite," she said. Her voice was full and rich and seductive. "I won't say that I've wanted to know you for a long time, but I am glad of the excuse. As for coming tonight," she laughed, "well, when I want a thing, I simply can't wait. When I want a thing, I simply must have it."
"Any excuse that has brought me such a charming lady guest must be welcomed by me," said Mr. Satterthwaite, in an old-fashioned, gallant manner.
"How nice you are to me," said Aspasia Glenn.
"Oh, my dear lady," said Mr. Satterthwaite, "may I thank you here and now for the pleasure you have so often given me in my seat in the stalls?" She smiled delightfully at him.
"I am coming straight to the point. I was at the Harchester Galleries today. I saw a picture there that I simply couldn't live without. I wanted to buy it, and I couldn't because you had already bought it. So," she paused, "I do want it so," she went on. "Dear Mr. Satterthwaite, I simply must have it. I brought my checkbook."
She looked at him hopefully.
"Everyone tells me you are so frightfully kind. People are kind to me, you know. It is very bad for me, but there it is."
So these were Aspasia Glenn's methods. Mr. Satterthwaite was inwardly, coldly critical of this ultra-femininity and of this spoiled child pose. It ought to appeal to him, he supposed, but it didn't. Aspasia Glenn had made a mistake. She had judged him as an elderly dilettante, easily flattered by a pretty woman. But Mr. Satterthwaite, behind his gallant manner, had a shrewd and critical mind. He saw people pretty well as they were, not as they wished to appear to him. He saw before him not a charming woman pleading for a whim, but a ruthless egoist, determined to get her own way for some reason which was obscure to him. And he knew quite certainly that Aspasia Glenn was not going to get her own way. He was not going to give up the picture of the dead harlequin to her. He sought rapidly in his mind for the best way of circumventing her without overt rudeness.
"I am sure," he said, "that everyone gives you your own way as often as they can and is only too delighted to do so." "Oh, then you are really going to let me have the picture?"
Mr. Satterthwaite shook his head slowly and regretfully.
"I am afraid that is impossible. You see," he paused, "I bought that picture for a lady. It is a present." "Oh, but surely..."
The telephone on the table rang sharply. With a murmured word of excuse, Mr. Satterthwaite took up the receiver. A voice spoke to him, a small, cold voice that sounded very far away.
"Can I speak to Mr. Satterthwaite, please?"
"It is Mr. Satterthwaite speaking."
"I'm Lady Charnley, Alex Charnley. I dare say you don't remember me, Mr. Satterthwaite. It is a great many years since we met."
"Oh, my dear Alex, of course I remember you."
"There is something I wanted to ask you. I was at the Harchester Galleries at an exhibition of pictures today. There was one called The Dead Harlequin. Perhaps you recognized it. It was the terrace room at Charnley. I wanted to have that picture. It was sold to you."
She paused.
"Mr. Satterthwaite, for reasons of my own, I want that picture. Will you resell it to me?"
Mr. Satterthwaite thought to himself, "Why, this is a miracle." As he spoke into the receiver, he was thankful that Aspasia Glenn could only hear one side of the conversation. "If you will accept my gift, dear lady, it will make me very happy." He heard a sharp exclamation behind him and hurried on. "I bought it for you. I did indeed. But listen, my dear Alex,
I want to ask you to do me a great favour, if you will.
Of course, Mr. Satterthwaite. I'm so very grateful.
He went on, I want you to come round now, to my house at once. There was a slight pause, and then she answered quietly,
I will come at once.
Mr. Satterthwaite put down the receiver and turned to Miss Glenn. She said quickly and angrily,
That was the picture you were talking about.
Yes, said Mr. Satterthwaite. The lady to whom I am presenting it is coming round to this house in a few minutes.
Suddenly, Aspasia Glenn's face broke once more into smiles.
You will give me a chance of persuading her to turn the picture over to me?
I will give you a chance of persuading her.
Inwardly, he was strangely excited. He was in the midst of a drama that was shaping itself to some foredoomed end. He, the looker-on, was playing a star part. He turned to Miss Glenn.
Will you come into the other room with me? I should like you to meet some friends of mine.
He held the door open for her, and crossing the hall, opened the door of the smoking room.
Miss Glenn, he said, let me introduce you to an old friend of mine, Colonel Monkton. Mr. Bristow, the painter of the picture you admire so much.
Then he started, as a third figure rose from the chair which he had left empty beside his own.
I think you expected me this evening, said Mr. Quinn. During your absence, I introduced myself to your friends. I am so glad I was able to drop in.
My dear friend, said Mr. Satterthwaite, I have been carrying on as well as I am able, but...
He stopped before the slightly sardonic glance of Mr. Quinn's dark eyes.
Let me introduce you. Mr. Harley Quinn, Miss Aspasia Glenn.
Was it fancy, or did she shrink back slightly? A curious expression flitted over her face. Suddenly Bristow broke in boisterously.
I've got it.
Got what?
Got hold of what was puzzling me. There's a likeness. There's a distinct likeness.
He was staring curiously at Mr. Quinn.
You see it?
He turned to Mr. Satterthwaite.
Don't you see a distinct likeness to the harlequin of my picture? The man looking in through the window.
It was no fancy this time. He distinctly heard Miss Glenn draw in her breath sharply, and even saw that she stepped back one pace.
I told you that I was expecting someone, said Mr. Satterthwaite.
He spoke with an air of triumph.
I must tell you that my friend Mr. Quinn is a most extraordinary person. He can unravel mysteries. He can make you see things.
Are you a medium, sir?
Demanded Colonel Monkton, eyeing Mr. Quinn doubtfully. The latter smiled and slowly shook his head. Mr. Satterthwaite exaggerates, he said quietly. Once or twice, when I have been with him, he has done some extraordinarily good deductive work. Why he puts the credit down to me, I can't say. His modesty, I suppose.
No, no, said Mr. Satterthwaite excitedly. It isn't. You make me see things. Things that I ought to have seen all along, that I actually have seen, but without knowing that I saw them.
Well, it sounds to me deuced complicated, said Colonel Monkton.
Not really, said Mr. Quinn. The trouble is that we are not content just to see things. We will tack the wrong interpretation onto the things we see. Aspasia Glenn turned to Frank Bristow.
I want to know, she said nervously. What put the idea of painting that picture into your head?
Bristow shrugged his shoulders.
I don't quite know, he confessed. Something about the place. About Charnley, I mean. Took hold of my imagination. The big empty room. The terrace outside. The idea of ghosts and things, I suppose. I've just been hearing the tale of the last Lord Charnley, who shot himself. Supposing you're dead, and your spirit lives on. Must be odd, you know. You might stand outside on the terrace looking in at the window at your own dead body, and you would see everything.
What do you mean?
Said Aspasia Glenn.
See everything?
Well, you would see what happened. You would see...
The door opened, and the butler announced Lady Charnley. Mr. Satterthwaite went to meet her. He had not seen her for nearly 13 years. He remembered her as she once was, an eager, glowing girl. And now he saw... a frozen lady. Very fair, very pale, with an air of drifting rather than walking. A snowflake, driven at random by an icy breeze. Something unreal about her. So cold, so far away.
It was very good of you to come, said Mr. Satterthwaite.
He led her forward. She made a half gesture of recognition towards Miss Glen, and then paused as the other made no response.
I'm so sorry, she murmured, but surely I have met you somewhere, haven't I?
Over the footlights, perhaps, said Mr. Satterthwaite. This is Miss Aspasia Glen, Lady Charnley.
I am very pleased to meet you, Lady Charnley, said Aspasia Glen. Her voice had suddenly a slight transatlantic tinge to it. Mr. Satterthwaite was reminded of one of her various stage impersonations.
Colonel Monckton, you know, continued Mr. Satterthwaite, and this is Mr. Bristow.
He saw a sudden faint tinge of colour in her cheeks.
Mr. Bristow I have met too, she said, and smiled a little, in a train.
And Mr. Harley Quinn.
He watched her closely, but this time there was no flicker of recognition. He set a chair for her, and then, seating himself, he cleared his throat and spoke a little nervously.
This is rather an unusual little gathering. It centres round this picture. I think that if we liked, we could clear things up.
Oh, you're not going to hold a seance, Satterthwaite? Asked Colonel Monckton. You are very odd this evening.
No, said Mr. Satterthwaite, not exactly a seance. But my friend Mr. Quinn believes, and I agree, that one can, by looking back over the past, see things as they were, and not as they appear to be.
The past, said Lady Charnley.
I am speaking of your husband's suicide, Alex. I know it hurts you.
No, said Alex Charnley. It doesn't hurt me. Nothing hurts me now.
Mr. Satterthwaite thought of Frank Bristow's words. She was not quite real, you know, shadowy, like one of the people who come out of the hills in Gaelic fairy tales. Shadowy, he had called her. That described her exactly. A shadow. A reflection of something else. Where, then, was the real Alex? And his mind answered quickly, in the past. Divided from us by 14 years of time.
My dear, he said, you frighten me. You are like the weeping lady with the silver ewer.
Crash! The coffee cup on the table by Aspasia's elbow fell shattered to the floor. Mr. Satterthwaite waved aside her apologies. He thought,
we are getting nearer. We are getting nearer every minute. But nearer to what? Let us take our minds back to that night, 14 years ago, he said. Lord Charnley killed himself. For what reason? No one knows.
Lady Charnley stirred slightly in her chair.
Lady Charnley knows, said Frank Bristow abruptly. Nonsense, said Colonel Monckton, then stopped, frowning at her curiously.
She was looking across at the artist. It was as though he drew the words out of her. She spoke, nodding her head slowly, and her voice was like a snowflake, cold and soft.
Yes, you are quite right. I know. That is why, as long as I live, I can never go back to Charnley. That is why, when my boy Dick wants me to open the place up and live there again, I tell him it can't be done.
Will you tell us the reason, Lady Charnley? Said Mr. Quinn.
She looked at him. Then, as though hypnotized, she spoke as quietly and naturally as a child.
I will tell you if you like. Nothing seems to matter very much now. I found a letter among his papers, and I destroyed it.
What letter? Said Mr. Quinn.
The letter from the girl, from that poor child. She was the Miriam's nursery governess. He had made love to her. Yes, while he was engaged to me, just before we were married. And she was going to have a child too. She wrote saying so, and that she was going to tell me about it. So you see, he shot himself.
She looked round at them, wearily and dreamily, like a child who has repeated a lesson it knows too well. Colonel Monckton blew his nose.
My God, he said. So that was it. Well, that explains things with a vengeance.
Does it? Said Mr. Satterthwaite. It doesn't explain one thing. It doesn't explain why Mr. Bristow painted that picture.
What do you mean?
Mr. Satterthwaite looked across at Mr. Quinn as though for encouragement, and apparently got it, for he proceeded.
Yes, I know I sound mad to all of you, but that picture is the focus of the whole thing. We are here tonight because of that picture. That picture had to be painted, that is what I mean.
Oh, you mean the uncanny influence of the oak parlour, began Colonel Monckton.
No, said Mr. Satterthwaite, not the oak parlour. The terrace room, that is it. The spirit of the dead man standing outside the window and looking in and seeing his own dead body on the floor.
Which he couldn't have done, said the Colonel, because the body was in the oak parlour.
Supposing it wasn't, said Mr. Satterthwaite. Supposing it was actually where Mr. Bristow saw it. Saw it imaginatively, I mean, on the black and white flags in front of the window.
You're talking nonsense, said Colonel Monckton. If it was there, we shouldn't have found it in the oak parlour.
Not unless someone carried it there, said Mr. Satterthwaite.
Well, in that case, how could we have seen Charlie going in at the door of the oak parlour? Inquired Colonel Monckton.
Well, you didn't see his face, did you? Asked Mr. Satterthwaite. What I mean is, you saw a man going into the oak parlour in fancy dress, I suppose.
Brocade things and a wig, said Monckton.
Just so. And you thought it was Lord Charnley, because the girl called out to him as Lord Charnley.
Well, and because when we broke in the door a few minutes later, there was only Lord Charnley there dead. You can't get away from that, Satterthwaite.
No, said Mr. Satterthwaite, discouraged. No. Unless there was a hiding place of some kind.
Weren't you saying something about there being a priest's hole in that room? Put in Frank Bristow.
Oh, cried Mr. Satterthwaite. Supposing?
He waved a hand for silence and sheltered his forehead with his other hand and then spoke slowly and hesitatingly.
I've got an idea. It may just be an idea, but I think it hangs together. Supposing someone shot Lord Charnley, shot him in the terrace room. Then he and another person dragged the body into the oak parlour. They laid it down there with the pistol by its right hand. Now, we go on to the next step. It must seem absolutely certain that Lord Charnley has committed suicide. I think that can be done very easily. The man in his brocade and wig passes along the hall by the oak parlour door, and someone, to make sure of things, calls out to him as Lord Charnley from the top of the stairs. He goes in and locks both doors and fires a shot into the woodwork. There were bullet holes already in that room, if you remember. One more wouldn't be noticed. He then hides quietly in the secret chamber. The doors are broken open and people rush in. It seems certain that Lord Charnley has committed suicide. No other hypothesis is ever entertained.
Well, I think that's balderdash, said Colonel Monckton. You forget that Charnley had a motive, right enough for suicide.
A letter found afterwards, said Mr. Satterthwaite. A lying, cruel letter written by a very clever and unscrupulous little actress who meant one day to be Lady Charnley herself.
Oh, you mean?
I mean the girl in league with Hugo Charnley, said Mr. Satterthwaite. You know, Monckton, everyone knows that that man was a blackguard. He thought that he was certain to come into the title.
He turned sharply to Lady Charnley.
What was the name of the girl who wrote that letter?
Monica Ford, said Lady Charnley.
Was it Monica Ford, Monckton, who called out to Lord Charnley from the top of the stairs?
Oh, yes,
Now you come to speak of it, I believe it was.
Oh, that's impossible, said Lady Charnley. I went to her about it. She told me it was all true. I only saw her once afterwards, but surely she couldn't have been acting the whole time.
Mr. Satterthwaite looked across the room at Aspasia Glen.
I think she could, he said quietly. I think she had in her the makings of a very accomplished actress.
There's one thing you haven't got over, said Frank Bristow. There would be blood on the floor of the terrace room. Bound to be. They couldn't clear that up in a hurry.
No, admitted Mr. Satterthwaite. But there is one thing they could do. A thing that would only take a second or two. They could throw over the bloodstains the Bokhara rug. Nobody ever saw the Bokhara rug in the terrace room before that night.
I believe you're right, said Monckton. But all the same, those bloodstains would have to be cleared up sometime.
Yes, said Mr. Satterthwaite, in the middle of the night. A woman with a jug and basin could go down the stairs and clear up the bloodstains quite easily.
But supposing someone saw her?
It wouldn't matter, said Mr. Satterthwaite. I am speaking now of things as they are. I said a woman with a jug and basin. But if I had said a weeping lady with a silver ewer, that is what they would have appeared to be.
He got up and went across to Aspasia Glen.
That is what you did, wasn't it? He said. They call you the woman with the scarf now. But it was on that night that you played your first part. The weeping lady with the silver ewer. That is why you knocked the coffee cup off that table just now. You were afraid when you saw that picture. You thought someone knew.
Lady Charnley stretched out a white, accusing hand.
Monica Ford, she breathed. I recognize you now.
Aspasia Glen sprang to her feet with a cry. She pushed little Mr. Satterthwaite aside with a shove of the hand and stood shaking in front of Mr. Quinn.
So I was right. Someone did know. Oh, I haven't been deceived by this tomfoolery, this pretense of working things out. She pointed at Mr. Quinn. You were there. You were there outside the window, looking in. You saw what we did, Hugo and I. I knew there was someone looking in. I felt it all the time. And yet when I looked up, there was nobody there. I knew someone was watching us. I thought once I caught a glimpse of a face at the window. It has frightened me all these years. Why did you break silence now? That's what I want to know.
Perhaps so that the dead may rest in peace, said Mr. Quinn. Suddenly, Aspasia Glen made a rush for the door and stood there flinging a few defiant words over her shoulder.
Do what you like. God knows there are witnesses enough to what I've been saying. I don't care. I don't care. I loved Hugo, and I helped him with the ghastly business, and he chucked me afterwards. He died last year. You can set the police on my tracks if you like. But as that little dried-up fellow there said, I'm a pretty good actress. They will find it hard to find me.
She crashed the door behind her. And a moment later, they heard the slam of the front door also.
Reggie!
Cried Lady Charnley.
Reggie!
The tears were streaming down her face.
Oh, my dear! My dear! I can go back to Charnley now. I can live there with Dickie. I can tell him what his father was. The finest, the most splendid man in all the world.
We must consult very seriously as to what must be done in the matter, said Colonel Monckton. Alex, my dear, if you will let me take you home, I shall be glad to have a few words with you on the subject.
Lady Charnley rose. She came across to Mr. Satterthwaite, and laying both hands on his shoulders, she kissed him very gently.
It is so wonderful to be alive again after being so long dead, she said.
It was like being dead, you know.
Thank you, dear Mr. Satterthwaite.
She went out of the room with Colonel Monckton. Mr. Satterthwaite gazed after them. A grunt from Frank Bristow, whom he had forgotten, made him turn sharply round.
She is a lovely creature, said Bristow moodily.
But she's not nearly so interesting as she was, he said gloomily.
There speaks the artist, said Mr. Satterthwaite.
Well, she isn't, said Mr. Bristow.
I suppose I should only get the cold shoulder if I ever went butting in at Charnley. I don't want to go where I'm not wanted.
My dear young man, said Mr. Satterthwaite, if you will think a little less of the impression you are making on other people, you will, I think, be wiser and happier. You would also do well to disabuse your mind of some very old-fashioned notions, one of which is that birth has any significance at all in our modern conditions. You are one of those large-proportioned young men whom women always consider good-looking, and you have possibly, if not certainly, genius. Just say that over to yourself 10 times before you go to bed every night, and in 3 months' time, go and call on Lady Charnley at Charnley. That is my advice to you. And I am an old man with considerable experience of the world. A very charming smile suddenly spread over the artist's face. You've been thunderingly good to me, he said suddenly. He seized Mr. Satterthwaite's hand and wrung it in a powerful grip. I'm no end grateful. I must be off now. Thanks very much for one of the most extraordinary evenings I've ever spent. He looked round, as though to say goodbye to someone else, and then started. I say, sir. Your friend has gone. I never saw him go. He's rather a queer bird, isn't he?
He goes and comes very suddenly, said Mr. Satterthwaite. That is one of his characteristics. One doesn't always see him come and go.
Like Harlequin, said Frank Bristow. He is invisible. And laughed heartily at his own joke.
We hope you have enjoyed The Dead Harlequin, a Harley Quinn short story by Agatha Christie, performed by Hugh Fraser. The Mysterious Mr. Quinn, text copyright 1930, Agatha Christie Limited. Production copyright 2005, HarperCollins Publishers Limited, all rights reserved. If you enjoyed this Agatha Christie story, don't miss The Mysterious Mr. Quinn, a Harley Quinn collection. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.